Welcome back to the Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese with you on this waiver wire and trade deadline edition of the show. Always pleased to be able to break things down, certainly from a waiver wire perspective, but a pretty busy trade deadline means we have a kind of secondary part to this podcast, which we don't always get to do. So trades are always fun, Matt. Fake trades are always fun, but real trades are always so much better. But why don't we get to the waiver wire pickups first? We'll kind of mix in the trades shortly afterwards, but it was a pretty busy week eight across the NFL, and it actually started, I always trip myself up with this. I guess it technically started on Thursday, right? The Thursday night game, wasn't the barn burner I think we all expected, to say the least, but the Sunday slate of games got started pretty early in London between the Broncos and Jaguars. And you know what's funny? You and I do the text line questions, and of course, people can text us at 590-590 every Sunday from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, and we answer all of those questions on and off the air, and a lot of the questions, like I would say a good like 20 to 25% of the questions had to do with the Broncos, and specifically, especially with guys like Kelce on bye and David Njoku, for example, who was a popular pickup, who you championed, for example, he was injured. So a lot of people looking for tight end help. Well, the Broncos rookie, Greg Dulcich, Dulcich Deleche, coming through in London. He is, I think there's a real chance he, Matt, could be a top 10 tight end by the end of the year, if he's not already, but he is rostered in 42% of Yahoo leagues. If he is somehow available out there and you need tight end help, you should be running to go pick him up, I would think.
Yeah, he's double-digit fantasy points in 2 of 3 weeks that he's played in half-point PPR. In full-point PPR, he's been double digits every single week. He's now playing the majority of the snaps at tight end for the Denver Broncos, and part of the reason why he's been so relevant is that Cortland Sutton has been pretty much irrelevant. Jerry Jeudy's kind of taken over that top spot, and Cortland Sutton is kind of lost in the woods here. Greg Dulcich has absolutely picked up the slack. And what's really interesting about Dulcich is there was some talk in camp about him eventually taking over the tight end one role from Albert Ogwebunam, I believe is how you say it.
Yeah.
And he's been basically on the sidelines. He hasn't even played the last couple of weeks, and Dulcich has been incredible. I read a stat today that Greg Dulcich has as many tight end one weeks as George Kittle, Tyler Higbee, and there was a couple of, maybe Hawkinson was in there, but there was a couple of guys. He has as many tight end one weeks as like some of the bigger name tight ends that we expect production from week in and week out. And he's only played 3 games. So go out. If Greg Dulcich is available, run to your waiver wire tonight. And if you need help, you know what? Even if you're, I know, especially with this week, because this week is, like the Broncos are on the bye, so you won't get to use them this week. But as the season starts to progress, you know, Mark Andrews is dealing with an injury. David Njoku's dealing with an injury. Yeah, go out and get him, even just to stash him on your bench in case of injury, because we know how volatile the tight end position is. And if you can go wrap up a guy who's going to put in and week out, like top 8 fantasy tight end numbers, you got to go wrap him up.
Yeah, got to order some Dulcich Deleche because he has been, again, a very small sample size, but and a lot of it does depend on whether or not you think Russell Wilson is going to continue to be relatively efficient after what was a pretty awful start to the year, like by any metric. But if he even approaches how he looked in London and he certainly continues to target Dulcich, then like we said, it's just such a wasteland at tight end. So any help you can get, especially with guys on bye, guys injured, Waller again, snake bit with the injury this year. Kelce was on bye last week. He's back, but Njoku, you really want to be looking at Taysom Hill every single week with the kind of gimmick he brings? Obviously, he's a talented guy, but it's just there are a lot of not so great options at tight end on a week to week basis. So if you can get any sort of chunk guy like Dulcich, then I think you should absolutely be running to the waiver wire and putting in a claim for him for tomorrow, or putting in some kind of fab bid claim, whatever it might be, priority fab. grab. I think it's definitely worth it for Greg Dulcich out of Denver. A couple of wide receivers to get to as well. Josh Palmer and Terrace Marshall Jr. I got to say, we've talked about Palmer before, Canadian, of course, Canada's own, and we'll get to Palmer in a second, but on Marshall Jr., he is rostered in just 1% of Yahoo leagues, Matt. I remember when he was drafted, I remember thinking, this kid is a freak athlete. Like, he is just an insanely athletic human being. Like, the kind of person I feel like you wouldn't be too shocked to see at the Olympics, for example, is this kid. And then, like, Matt Rhule put him in, like, wide receiver jail in Carolina. And I gotta say, it is astonishing what that team looks like without Matt Rhule at its helm. Like, it looks like a completely different team. And I know, like, it's helped when you can see, like, insane plays, like P.J. Walker with seconds to go, maybe with one of the most impressive individual throws I have ever seen. Like, on the move, throws away, places it right in the hands of DJ Moore as he hits the end zone, and they still somehow lost that game. Like, that was an insane game. But Terrace Marshall Jr., rostered in just 1%. I don't know if things keep up for old PJ. I honestly don't, but if they do, you want a piece of that offense because they seem to have things humming right now against bad teams.
Yeah, and because there's so many division games, they're going to keep playing bad teams because that division is absolutely awful. Terrace Marshall Jr., second round pick, and he was, in LSU, his last year, he got hurt. He played 7 games. He had 48 catches and 731 yards and 10 touchdowns in 7 games for LSU that year. That last time I checked is pretty good. And he's coming off of a 9-target game against the Falcons. He's played over 80% of the snaps the last 2 weeks. He's the clear wide receiver 2 in this offense. And, if P.J. Walker continues to play well and they let him throw the ball a little bit, it's not a team that's going to be in low-scoring games because their defense can't stop a nosebleed. And they're going to have to throw the ball to stay in games because, they lost that Christian McCaffrey guy. Not that Deonta Foreman has been bad because he's been pretty good. But without McCaffrey, that's another wave of targets that's coming in. They don't have Robbie Anderson there anymore. DJ Moore has picked it up, yes. But somebody has to pick up the slack, and I do believe that that guy is Terrace Marshall Jr., and please don't call him Terrence.
I actually, when I was reading his name, I remember when he was a rookie, I remember thinking, am I just mispronouncing his name? Like, is there Terrence?
There's a spelling mistake here. Everywhere, there's a spelling mistake.
Yeah, literally everywhere his name has been written, there is a spelling mistake. That's legit what I thought, but no, his name is actually Terrace Marshall Jr. Again, rostered in just 1% of Yahoo leagues. And I mentioned our Canadian pal, Josh Palmer. Again, like the hamstring thing for Keenan Allen has been nagging him essentially all season. Shame on me for buying into Keenan Allen, I guess, because you made this comment during the show a couple weeks ago, but Brian Robinson Jr. returned faster from gunshot wounds than Keenan Allen did from hamstring injuries. Like, it's just, I think the kind of nagging injuries are the worst, because when a guy tears his ACL, or you're like, okay, this guy is done for the season. He's going to heal up. He's going to get the surgery in a couple of days once the inflammation dies down, and he's going to be back next year. ACL injuries are not the death knell for careers they once were, like 20 years ago or whatever. But hamstring injuries are so tough because they can flare up. They can be inflamed for so long. They kind of linger for forever, it feels like. So, I mean, look, I am by no means a high performance athlete, Matt, but I pulled my hamstring a couple of weeks ago, and it feels like my leg is going to fall off. And I can only imagine what it's like if you're trying to play actual professional football. So I don't blame Keenan Allen, but I wish they would just, like, put him on IR or something so you can have a little bit more clarity as to what's happening here. Either way, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams also suffering the injury in their previous game. So Josh Palmer, Canada's own, I think is like you say, is probably worthy of a pickup.
Yeah, and I think that Keenan Allen's going to be back this week. They had the bye, and he was close before, but I mean, I'm not sure. We know Mike Williams is out. Mike Williams has a high ankle sprain. That's usually at least a month. It could be longer. And Josh Palmer, the last time that we saw him still was a couple of weeks ago, because he missed last week, the last time that the Chargers played as well. And in that game, he had 12 targets, 9 catches for 57 yards. He does well when one of Keenan Allen or Mike Williams is out of the lineup. And this seems to be an ongoing trend. And if he's not rostered anywhere, he's absolutely worth a shot. Listen, I don't think that the Chargers offense is going to be as bad as we've seen it be. You know, Justin Herbert has the extra week to recover. That rib injury is still lingering. It didn't just go away. He's been getting beaten up all season long, and hopefully this week off has rejuvenated not only Justin Herbert, but the entire Chargers offense. I think that they're going to come out of the gate. They get the Falcons in their first game out of the gate. I think they'll be just fine. And I think that Josh Palmer is going to play a big part in that. We always want to attach ourselves when we're talking about wide receivers to good quarterbacks. And this is a player that has a good quarterback. Josh Palmer absolutely should be on your radar if you have some wide receiver troubles. And this is the bye week from hell. Six teams on a bye and some really good players out. Josh Palmer is a guy that you should try and lock up.
Brampton's own Josh Palmer rostered in just 27% of Yahoo League. So yeah, if Keenan Allen is out or if he's limited in any way, and Mike Williams definitely out. And like you said, against the Falcons of all teams, like this is a team we just finished talking about, the Panthers. This is a team that PJ Walker just cooked. So I would imagine Josh Palmer will get a starring role here. I would imagine DJ Moore will, and so will Dante Foreman, who has been absolutely phenomenal since becoming the new RB1 in Carolina. But I definitely think that if those guys can cook the Falcons defense, I would imagine Justin Herbert and company can as well. Our final waiver wire pickup before we get to the trade deadline discussions. Isaiah Pacheco, rostered in just 34% of Yahoo leagues. He boomed us the other week, Matt. Okay, we were like, oh man, Isaiah Pacheco is going to be the starting running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. He got the first team reps all weekend. He's doing this, he's doing that. It was all this great stuff, and then he did nothing. He did absolutely nothing. It was not so great for anyone who dropped players to pick him up or perhaps started him like I did. Wasn't a great situation, but rostered in 34% of Yahoo leagues. Why are you convinced people should be rostering Pacheco now?
Well, probably because there's just not much out there, and there's a chance that he could be a running back that if there's an injury to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's going to walk into touches. And we've seen this. Like, we saw it with James Cook coming out of the bye with Buffalo. We saw James Cook used a little bit more than he was. Granted, it was only six touches, but he turned the six touches into like 78 yards, and he almost had as many yards as Devin Singletary did on like 16 touches. So the way I look at it is this. When teams go on their bye, rookies get a little bit more acquainted with the offense. Coaches figure out how this player fits, how they can, you know, bring them into the fold more, how they can use them in different ways. And I think Isaiah Pacheco falls into that category as well. He's a rookie. He was used a little bit more as the season progressed. He was named the quote unquote starter. And I know that means squat. I get that. But to me, it signaled that this team is looking for a different type of runner than what Clyde Edwards-Helaire is. And Isaiah Pacheco is a very hard runner. Like, when you watch him, he is a violent runner. And I think that that's what that offense needs, because it gives them a little bit of, it diversifies their offense out of the backfield. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a guy who runs outside the tackles, not inside the tackles. And the last time that a running back had success in that offense, it was Kareem Hunt. And Isaiah Pacheco is more Kareem Hunt than he is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. When you look at the waiver wire, there's not a lot to choose from in terms of running back help. But Isaiah Pacheco, if he's available, again, attached to a good offense, and we've seen how many touchdowns Clyde Edwards-Helaire has scored this year. What happens if he gets hurt? Isaiah Pacheco walks into touchdowns. Maybe he runs into touchdowns at that point. But you're getting a guy with a really high ceiling in case of injury. And again, the waiver wire is really thin at running back. Isaiah Pacheco could end up being, you know, a league winner if Clyde Edwards-Helaire were to go down.
Well, I mean, you say he runs in. I mean, he's a running back. I certainly hope he runs in. No, he's not a walking
back.
Well,
I mean, I don't know. Have you seen some of the touchdowns Clyde Edwards-Helaire scored this year? True. He literally walked in some.
It is true. There were some pretty gaping holes and got, like, there are some touchdowns when you look back at some of those replays that, like, and you just you zoom out a little bit, there's like no one within like 10 feet of him on some of these plays, right?
Yeah.
So it's true. I think, you know, like we always say, you want the pieces of the best offenses for the most part. And certainly Isaiah Pacheco is a part of that. And like you said, if anything does happen to CEH, then whether it's illness, which is something that afflicted him last year, or an injury or what have you, then yeah, you definitely want to own Pacheco. So that's the quick look at the waiver wire options for this week ahead of week 9 in the NFL. Greg Dulcich, Josh Palmer, Terrace Marshall Jr., and Isaiah Pacheco. And you mentioned Kareem Hunt, which of course leads us to the trade deadline discussion here, because of course the deadline was at 4 p.m. Eastern earlier today. So now that it's been a couple hours since the deadline we're recording this, so you can kind of look back and see some of the fallout around the NFL. Some defensive players traded, and I mean, you and I don't really cover IDP. We could, I suppose, but I think that most people, when they play fantasy football, discuss the offensive players. I gotta say, even though there were a flurry of moves, I don't think any one move is going to be super impactful, league-winning type of moves this year in terms of fantasy football. There are a couple that I wanted to highlight here in terms of offensive players being traded. So I'm going to list a couple of them, then we can just go through a couple of these trades real quick, Matt. So TJ Hawkinson was traded from the Lions to the Vikings. I think that's a great thing for the Vikings, certainly giving Kirk Cousins more targets and helping take pressure off of guys like certainly Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen and KJ Osborne. Irv Smith Jr. injured, so it still gives them a pretty dynamic passing game target, which I really like. So I'm not sure what that means for the Lions. Like, it's kind of feels like to me that if you're trading away, and again, I don't know if Hawkinson is a foundational piece necessarily, but if you're trying to prep a Lions team for drafting like Bryce Young or something next year, or like CJ Stroud or what have you, if you're trying to prep the Lions for that, you would think you want to keep TJ Hawkinson and not trade him away. But either way, Hawkinson is on his way to Minnesota. Nyheim Hines has been traded from the Colts to the Bills. Zach Moss going back to the Colts as a part of, along with some draft pick compensation. So I'm not sure if you should be rushing to go pick up Deion Jackson as your backup to Jonathan Taylor just yet, but at the same time, Nyheim Hines is going to be a Buffalo Bill. Chase Claypool traded from the Pittsburgh Steelers to the Chicago Bears, and then a couple of swaps for the Dolphins and Broncos here. Jeff Wilson going from San Francisco to the Dolphins, and then Chase Edmonds going from the Dolphins to the Broncos. So those are probably some of the biggest trades of the afternoon on the offensive fantasy football side of things. I'll give you the choice, Matt. Dealer's choice. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with Hawkinson.
Okay.
Because first of all, not very often do intra-divisional trades happen. And that one was a bit of a shocker. I figured TJ Hawkinson was available. I did not figure that he was going to the Minnesota Vikings. And then we found out that Irv Smith Jr. is going to be out. He was put on the IR, and I think it was like 8 to 10 weeks he was going to miss. So essentially, he's done for the rest of the season, which is why they acquired TJ Hawkinson. I'd like the fit. Because like for real football, I think it's a great addition. That's an offense that can keep up with anybody as long as the quarterback doesn't turn the ball over, which he's done a pretty good job of not doing. But for fantasy purposes, I don't love this. Like, we saw Irv Smith be up and down. Irv Smith never really became the tight end that we thought he was going to be. And I'm saying it like it's the end of his career, but it's probably the end of his time in Minnesota. You can almost make the argument that TJ Hawkinson is much of the same, because we were hearing things like, this guy is going to be like Travis Kelce. That's how good he can be. And he may end up being that guy. It could happen one day, but I don't think that it's going to happen in this offense with the weapons that are already there. I think he gets a boost because I think he gets more consistent quarterback play, and hopefully he makes the most of the volume that he gets, which I don't believe is going to be very high. But I do think that he slots ahead of KJ Osborne in terms of target share. Dalvin Cook is obviously still in the mix, and Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson are at the top of that list. So if he slots in at 3 or maybe 4, it's probably 3. It's not a horrible landing spot, but I mean, the production might be a little bit more consistent, but I don't know if we're going to get him, you know, the pop-off type of production where you look and go, that's a guy that I absolutely need to start every single week.
Yeah, like I think TJ Hawkinson will probably be one of those spot start type of tight ends. But then again, like, that's kind of what he was already, right? Like, I don't feel like it changes his value too much. Like, it probably does make him take a bit of a hit just because Kirk Cousins throws the ball to Justin Jefferson a whole hell of a lot. And maybe at best he usurps Adam Thielen. If everything goes TJ Hockenson's way, perhaps, because Adam Thielen is getting a little long in the tooth right now. But having said that, I mean, if you're looking at fantasy value, again, tight end, we talk about this every single week, and we probably will until the end of time. Tight end is so barren that I think he obviously is still someone you can start, I feel like, most weeks. But generally speaking, yeah, I think you're not going to be expecting more. Like, if you get like 7 points or like 5 to 6 points, maybe even being a little less generous at a Hockenson most weeks, even on the Vikings, you probably think to yourself, okay, that's a win. That's a huge win. On the flip side, I would imagine this is an uptick in target share for basically all wide receivers in Detroit. Like, I can only imagine it just means more passes going to DeAndre Swift and more passes going to the sun god, Amon-Ra St. Brown.
I would hope that more go to DeAndre Swift because he played this week and it was an absolute disaster. Definitely did not get what we thought we were going to get. No. Although he did have five catches, but the rushing numbers were certainly not there. I think he had 2 or 3 rushing attempts. I wonder if he's banged up, but yes, give me all of the DeAndre Swift work as humanly possible. Give him 10 targets a game. I don't care. I'd be happy with that because you know me, I'm a big DeAndre Swift fan. That offense is going to hurt, though, because TJ Hockenson, the one thing he does really well that we don't talk enough about is he's one of the better blockers at the tight end position. So that's where guys like DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams are going to be hurt. But the Lions don't care about our fantasy teams. They're trying to get the first overall pick.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that does mean good things for Dalvin Cook. I mean, obviously, Dalvin Cook is still one of the better running backs in the NFL, so it can only mean better things for guys like Dalvin Cook. But yeah, I think that's it's an interesting, when you look at the kind of tertiary fallout for guys like Hockenson and the blocking, which is not exactly quantified in fantasy statistics at the very least, right? Let's stick with the running backs here. And there's a trio of running backs I had mentioned before that all got traded today: Nyheim Hines, Jeff Wilson Jr., Chase Edmonds. Let's start with Hines, who is a member of your Buffalo Bills now, Mr. Marchese. Again, I don't think, like, it, to me, it's not a super impactful trade beyond this probably simply signaling the Bills felt like the depth after Singletary wasn't where they wanted it to be. So it means Zach Moss is now no longer a Bill. He is now on the Colts. It probably does damper slightly the outlook for James Cook because they kind of both do the same thing now. And I mean, at the end of the day, Josh Allen doesn't throw the ball to running backs just a lot, right? He either takes off himself or he is throwing it down the field to Gabriel Davis or certainly Stephon Diggs or any of the wide receivers. So I don't think it's the most impactful fantasy trade. It just does feel like a depth move for what the Bills hope will be a very deep real life Super Bowl run.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what it is. I think it's just the depth. Zach Moss was not getting it done, and he gets a fresh start in Indianapolis where he's probably the backup to Jonathan Taylor. But Nyheim Hines fills a role, and honestly, I don't know how much it affects James Cook a little bit, but I don't think anybody was relying on James Cook outside of an injury anyway, although I have to start him in our work league because I am just ravaged by bye weeks and injuries. However, having said that, I think what the Bills did is they just added another weapon that they needed. I think that's what it is. I think for fantasy purposes, both Nyheim Hines and James Cook are basically waiting for an injury to Devin Singletary. Devin Singletary is getting, you know, 15 to 17 touches a game, and nobody else is coming close to double digits. So that's the way this offense is going to operate. Is Nyheim Hines worth going to pick up? I mean, maybe, but I wouldn't have too many expectations for that. The offense has thrown to the running back position more this season, but it's not something where you look at it and go, okay, like, we need to lock up, you know, the pass catching back in this offense, much like, you know, in previous incarnations of Tom Brady's offense with James White. Like, you're not going to see that here. So is he worth a pickup? Maybe if you're kind of hurting in the depth department at running back. But I still think that if Devin Singletary were to go down, I think James Cook is the back to own just because he's going to get the early down work. And then if that were to happen, then I think Nyheim Hines slides in nicely. But they're going to be able to use Nyheim Hines out of the backfield, out of the slot. Like, he's a very, very adept pass catcher. And I think the Bills just did this just to have another weapon that they can use it in different facets of the game.
So you and I have talked a lot about handcuffs today, right? We talked about Pacheco and like what could be if another guy gets injured. It's kind of the same conversation to a certain degree with Nyheim Hines as to, you know, him and Cook are kind of just waiting for something to happen to Singletary, like you mentioned. It's kind of the same, it feels like, for Jeff Wilson Jr. Like, first of all, like he was definitely serviceable before the CMC trade and after Eli Mitchell was injured. But with Jeff Wilson Jr. being dealt to Miami, certainly going to play for his former coach, Mike McDaniel, Jeff Wilson Jr. now a Miami Dolphin. I imagine, again, handcuff-wise, this means that, one, Wilson Jr. is now Mostert's handcuff, because Mostert had basically completely taken over that backfield. I mean, I really hope we don't see some kind of committee now that we have like a recreation of what was happening in San Francisco in Miami. I certainly hope it remains Raheem Mostert's backfield as long as he is healthy. So again, if health affects Mostert negatively in some way, then yeah, Jeff Wilson Jr. obviously becomes very valuable. But that's kind of how I view it. He is now Mostert's handcuff, and then also the fallout from that in San Francisco is that Eli Mitchell is clearly the CMC handcuff, and Mitchell, I don't think, has come back to practice relatively recently anyway. So again, it's kind of like a negligible move in the end, barring injuries to one of Raheem Mostert or Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, Eli Mitchell, I'm assuming they made this trade because they're getting closer to having Elijah Mitchell back.
Right.
That's what my guess would be. Jeff Wilson, though, he's in an interesting spot just because that offense has been better than not the offense, but Raheem Mostert's been better than we thought he was going to be. Everybody had Chase Edmonds, who we're going to get to in a second, penciled in as the guy in that offense because they paid him a bunch of money and that just didn't work. And Raheem Mostert gets a 1-year deal and all of a sudden he becomes the running back and they trade away Chase Edmonds. So I do think that there is value because the Miami offense has been really good. And the San Francisco offense, ever since acquiring Christian McCaffrey, go figure, is also really good. Both of those guys should be rostered, especially if you have Mostert, especially if you have McCaffrey. They should absolutely be rostered. So they're worth speculative ads because, again, both offenses playing really well. And Elijah Mitchell was good for the Niners before they acquired Christian McCaffrey. So I think that there's some optimism there in case he were to go down. And like we said, Jeff Wilson, he had some familiarity with Mike McDaniel, who was previously with the San Francisco 49ers, as we know. And Jeff Wilson has shown in his time when the starter goes down, he's more than a viable fill-in. So I don't hate the move if you want to go pick him up, because I know I've dropped Jeff Wilson in a bunch of leagues, and I'm sure other people have, and I'm sure he's readily available in a lot of leagues.
I kept him in our work league because we're in a 14-team league, and I basically have to. Like, I knew that if I dropped him, like you or Josh or like one of those other guys, Boffa, was going to pick him, snap him up immediately. So I thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to die with Jeff Wilson Jr. on my roster.
That's it.
So
that's it.
That's what you got to do in these larger leagues. Let's get to Chase Edmonds, and then we'll do Chase Claypool. The two Chases getting traded today. Chase Edmonds, he was one of those guys, or I definitely thought, like, you know, follow the money a little bit, kind of like the Christian Kirk thing. He was paid a lot of money to come in and be, you would think, the guy. And apart from a couple of very short touchdowns, his tenure in Miami was not very memorable. Traded to the Denver Broncos. And again, I guess there's a chance this could be impactful, but it certainly seems to me like in the wake of the injury to Javonte Williams, it is a full-blown committee. I mean, certainly Mike Boone was put on the IR, so now you have Latavius Murray, you have Chase Edmonds, and you have, of course, Melvin Gordon himself to all contend with. Honestly, at this point, it is anyone's guess as to who will be the more reliable targets on any given basis. The Broncos are also off this week, so you won't get any answers or any clarity on this situation until week 10. So that's something to keep in mind. Chase Edmonds might be available on your waiver wire, depending on the size of your league or the size of benches, for example. But again, I don't think that it's probably not a move that makes people run to the waiver wire to pick up Chase Edmonds, at least for week 9, maybe in week 10, when we get some more coach speak to parse through from Nathaniel Hackett, maybe then, but not right now.
Yeah. Here's why it's interesting to me. Melvin Gordon, they've clearly lost faith in, because Latavius Murray's been kind of the guy. Latavius Murray does not offer much in the passing game, but what we saw before Javonte Williams got hurt was Javonte Williams be heavily used in the passing game. They clearly didn't feel that way about Melvin Gordon, who I believe is approaching 30. I actually think that Chase Edmonds is a sneaky, interesting add if you can go get him, just because of his ability to catch the ball. And we've seen what Nathaniel Hackett's offenses have looked like in the past. And I think that part of the reason why this offense has struggled is because they haven't had the running back that they can throw the ball to, which gives them an added element that, you know, teams have to account for defensively. I would be willing to take a flyer on Chase Edmonds, because at this point in time, what are you going to lose? Chase Edmonds, I'm not saying he's going to be a league winner, but as the bye weeks continue, he's a player that could fill in for you in a pinch. And who knows, if he starts getting, you know, 3-4 catches a game, we may be talking about someone who, you know, much like Nyheim Hines a couple of years ago and Darren Sproles before him, you know, these backs that don't get a ton of early down carries or don't get a ton of carries, period, but their value is so good in the passing game that they have to be rostered, and to a point where they may be even borderline startable in a flex spot.
I'm curious to see what the carry to involvement in the passing game delineation for all of these Broncos running backs will be. But again, it's not something we can parse out right now. Like, I have Chase Edmonds again in one, I think, I'm not sure if it's in our work league or if it's in a different league I'm in, but I think it is in our work league. And Chase Edmonds, like, I'm not going to drop him by any means, but he just like a lot. And a lot of the guys we've talked about today are the kinds of guys who you don't always feel great about starting them, but you don't want to drop them either, because there is some use for them, right? Like, these guys, you know, in every league, someone always offers you, like, I got an offer the other day. I have Stephon Diggs in one of my leagues, and in that particular league, he is the wide receiver 1 overall. And it makes me think to myself, like, people offer me things like, it'll be like Chase Edmonds and Leonard Fournette and Christian Kirk for Diggs. And it's like, okay, like in a vacuum, I guess getting 3-for-1 is not a bad idea, but it's like, none of those guys are good enough for me to make me think, okay, I'm going to like divest myself of the Diggs shares, let's say. Right. So that's where all these guys, they kind of fall in that like dead zone to me, where you can't really drop them, but you can't always start them. But again, maybe things in 2 weeks, maybe we're talking about some of these guys a little differently. Before we go, wanted to get to the last big-ish trade that might have a fantasy football impact. Chase Claypool, the other Chase, Canada's own Chase Claypool as well, being traded to the Chicago Bears from the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think the skinny on the Claypool trade, Matt, is that this is great for Justin Fields, probably not so great for any other Bears targets, just because of the amount they throw the ball, which is to say not a lot. And I guess it's like, it doesn't really seem to make a difference for like any of Kenny Pickett, Deontay Johnson, or George Pickens, because it doesn't really feel like his absence is going to impact them getting, like, maybe they each get like one target more a game, basically.
Yeah, and the way I kind of look at it is this. Maybe they will end up throwing the ball a little bit more because they have that new shiny toy. I do think that in a way, it kind of makes Darnell Mooney a little bit more valuable week in and week out, just because he may not draw top cover every week because Chase Claypool's there. Like, I mean, no teams are accounting for Damir Bird if we're having a real conversation, or Equanimeous St. Brown, or, you know, insert journeyman wide receiver here, because that's basically what their wide receiver core is outside of Darnell Mooney. So I think there's some added value there. I think it hurts Kmet, although he hasn't, you know, outside of the touchdown last week, hasn't really been relevant at all this season. So I think there's some value for Chase Claypool there. Listen, Justin Fields over the last 5 weeks has looked like a much improved quarterback. I don't know what changed, because the offensive line still sucks. I don't know if it's a confidence thing, but Justin Fields looks a lot better. I think, like you mentioned, Justin Fields is the biggest beneficiary of all, because he gets another guy that he can trust throwing the ball to.
Yeah, exactly. And I again, this may not be an option that is immediately see the dividends for when it comes to Justin Fields. But I dare say by the end of the year, if you give Fields more options or just more help, period, he will probably be better, right? I mean, again, I'm not saying this is the equivalent of Tua getting Tyreek Hill or Jalen Hurts getting AJ Brown. Like, I'm not saying it's that by any means, but just providing your quarterback with more options to throw the ball to. Josh Allen getting Stephon Diggs also comes to mind, right? You providing any of those guys more talent around them on the offensive side, they will probably have a better chance to succeed. I think that's probably the bare way of looking at it. Hey, bare way. I didn't mean to say that, but there you go. So you that's the only way you look at it. And Justin Fields, fantasy-wise, has actually looked a lot better in the last, let's say, 2 to 3 weeks than he did to start the season, which was a real dismal start. But it definitely, to me at least, Matt, it suggests that the Bears are saying to their head coach, Eberflus, to go out there, take care of the defensive side of the ball. And I know they just traded away Roquan Smith to the Ravens, but that was probably we were never going to be able to re-sign him at the cost he wants anyways, because interior linebackers are not a dime a dozen, but like guys on that level, if you don't have like a Hall of Fame Ray Lewis type, you're probably can afford to trade him away and get like relatively speaking similar production. But the Bears, I feel like, are saying, hey, coach, go out there, take care of the defensive side of the ball. We're going to give Justin Fields a couple more toys to play with, and we'll see what his development looks like from now until next year in 2023.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. They need to figure out what Justin Fields is, and I think we're getting close to figuring out that Justin Fields is an NFL quarterback, and a very good one at that. But yeah, this is very much a learning season for the Chicago Bears, and I would like to see them let Justin Fields throw the ball 35 times a game. I mean, they have the running back. Sure, I get that. They want to run the ball, but why not let him sling it and see what happens? Their thinking is at this point, and I know the Roquan Smith deal, they deal away a very good player, but they're still within striking distance of a playoff spot because the NFC is so bad. I mean, and I think that's where some of the hesitation is. It's like, okay, let's try and run the ball. Let's try and game manage. But man, Justin Fields, and not only his ability with his arm, but of course his legs, the way he's been able to move the ball with his feet, it's just been a treat to watch. And that they put up a lot more points on that Dallas defense than I thought they were capable of.
Yeah, you know what? That I agree with. I know the Dallas defense still had a pretty good day fantasy point wise, but all things considered, I definitely agree. Justin Fields himself still had a pretty decent outing. I will say this: like of all of the QBs drafted in that draft, and again, it's only been like hasn't even been a full. Like, I guess it's been just over a full calendar year, I should say. But when you look at all the guys, like the Trey Lance, he got injured. Mac Jones, he's been dealing with an injury as well so far for much of the season. You look at Justin Fields, you look at Zach Wilson. I mean, Justin Fields, he's been healthy, which is great because all three of those other guys have had some pretty bad injuries over the course of the season. But Justin Fields has definitely looked the most poised. Like, if you're comparing just Fields and Wilson, I don't know. Like, I think I'd probably take Justin Fields. If you swap them, pardon me, and you put Fields in the Jets right now and you put Wilson on the Bears right now, I still feel like I would have some pretty good confidence in Justin Fields succeeding with guys like Garrett Wilson and so on, right? Like that, not you can never compare situations one-to-one, but Fields definitely looks like he is getting better faster than some of these other guys.
For the record, I had Justin Fields as better than Trevor Lawrence when he was coming out of Ohio State, so... We'll see how
what's up with Trevor Lawrence these days anyways. What's up with that?
I don't know.
Like what's going on with them?
It doesn't look good right now. I think the offensive line, I think it's regressed a lot from the beginning of the year. I think that's part of the problem because Travis Etienne has been just fine, but in pass blocking, Trevor Lawrence just is not getting any help in it. And it's been a real disappointment after the start that he had.
Yeah, hey, I definitely thought like the Jaguars offense looked absolutely ridiculous for the first three games. And then it's not that they've fallen apart, but it doesn't look quite as impressive. Christian Kirk doesn't look that impressive. Travis Etienne, though, looks like the real deal, doesn't he? Like he is like the bell cow. He's the guy we've all been waiting for. We did the buy sell hold thing on Etienne a couple of weeks ago, like maybe like 3 or 4 weeks ago, maybe more. And now that he is the guy Ooh, Matt, he looks great. But the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think they're obviously not a completed product and probably won't be for a couple of seasons. So the jury's probably still out, like, on all of the QBs from last year's draft class. But, hey, Justin Fields looks great. And I'm crossing my fingers as someone with a lot of shares of Kirk and Etienne that Trevor Lawrence looks a little better as well. Before we go, Thursday night game is the Eagles at Texans. And, of course, the only reason is interesting to me because I think most people expect the Eagles to just absolutely crap on the Texans because they're really good and the Texans are really bad. I think the only reason this is interesting to me is because somehow this game, Philly at Houston, will be the exact opposite of the World Series. Houston is going to be in Philly for, I guess it will be game five of the World Series, if I'm remembering correctly, after the postponement. Game three goes later tonight. There's nothing really more to say on that other than that is the weirdest scheduling oddity I've seen in some time.
Yeah, and the game is gonna suck. It's gonna like the World Series is definitely gonna be better than that game.
I hope so. God,
I think the Eagles are just gonna, like, that could be a 30-point blowout type thing.
You know, that now that you've said that, it's gonna be like Jalen Hurts is gonna throw. Yeah, he's gonna throw like four picks. Damian Pierce is going to have like 18 carries for 65 yards and a fumble. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be like a 10-3 game.
Just like I thought the Monday Nighter was starting out to be. And then it turned into an absolute disaster for the Cincinnati Bengals, which, whatever. It happens. Jacoby Brissett just lights up the Bengals, you know, because we are so used to that.
Oh, man. I got to say, I didn't expect the Bengals offense to look so, like, I don't know if lost is the right word, but I mean,
horrible. Horrible just, was the word. Horrible.
With no Jamar Chase, it looked pretty listless, right? But hey, maybe that changes. Boyd still caught a touchdown. Higgins still caught a touchdown. So maybe that's what's in store, at least production wise, for those two wide receivers, even if the Bengals aren't going to be winning a lot of games. Joe Mixon, I have my doubts on Joe Mixon as to whether or not he's going to be super fantasy relevant the rest of the way. But I mean, I guess if you're on a high ish powered offense, like we were talking about before with other guys, you always want some pieces of that. But I digress. We will continue the start sits and the discussion for every week 9 game after Thursday night, certainly on Sunday morning from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the Fantasy Show. But Matt, best of luck watching either the World Series or Thursday night football, whichever tickles your fancy, and I'll talk to you on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll talk to you then. I'm sure those games will be watching me at that point.
I think so. Yeah, I think that I'm secretly hoping for the World Series to be over in 5 games, so my work schedule for next week doesn't get too messed up. But something tells me this series will be settled one way or another in Houston on either Saturday or Sunday. But that's Matt Marchese. I'm Sho Ali. Again, we'll talk to you on Sunday morning from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.